You're listening to an encore presentation of The Rush with Ryan and Jay. News Talk 1010.
This doesn't surprise me.
I think that sends the right message on so many different levels.
What a crock, eh?
Time to feel the rush of the round table.
Welcome to the Tuesday, August the 27th edition of the round table. I've time stamped it, so I think it's going to be that awesome. No pressure. Joining us for the National Post is Christy Blatchford. Hello, Christy. Hey, Christy.
I said hello.
It's okay. It was on our end.
Oh, good. Well, hello to you both. Hello.
Hello to you as well. Joining us in studio, News Talk 1010, the political commentator, as well as partner at Upstream Strategy, Chris Chapin.
How's it going?
I am well, man. How are you?
Very good.
Chris walked in. He's like, I know me again, right?
I know.
We're just that happy
it's
to
weird.
See
it's
you.
Tuesday.
We love to see you.
Yeah.
Although usually you're a Friday guy, right?
I am. I bring it home on the end
bring
of the
it
week.
Home on the Friday. All right. Listen, lots to talk about today, including an announcement today that new Ontario teachers will now have to score 70% on math tests. We're asking if it would make you feel better about your kids' math scores, if this is even necessary. New teachers in Ontario, soon passing that test, a process their unions say are going to do nothing to improve students' math skills. A memo from the Deputy Education Minister says the new test will be in place at the end of this upcoming academic year. It will include both math questions based on elementary and secondary school concepts and questions on math assessment, planning, and facilitating student learning. Do you agree with parents, Christy? Do you agree that this might not necessarily improve their kids' math skills?
Well, it depends. If the teachers who are going to be tested are going to be math teachers, then it's important to have them tested so you know they're competent. But if they're going to be teaching art or something else, then I'm afraid I agree with Sam Hammond from the Elementary Teachers Federation. You know, it doesn't make any sense. You could have a really excellent teacher in, I don't know, English, history, art, who then isn't qualified to become a teacher because she doesn't pass the math test by 70%. Most of the teachers I know are somewhat specialists. You know, they're math and science, or they're French immersion, or they're, you know, on the sort of art English history side, as it were. So I don't know if this makes sense.
So, Bill, when you hear that Ontario students and teachers, rather, will have to score 70% on math tests, does it make you feel better about students coming into the school system?
You know, my son kept complaining that his French teacher didn't speak French. And I thought he was an idiot.
No, he was telling the truth.
But then I realized up until grade 8, I guess, or grade 9, French teacher doesn't have to really speak French. My wife went and talked to her during the parent-teacher meeting, barely understood a word. So, you know, I
Bill's wife is French. We should point that out.
Yes, he's from Quebec City. So, you know, when I can speak French better than your high school French teacher, that's a problem. No, but the reality is I want my teachers to be just a little ahead. 70% is not much to ask. And if you're not going to teach calculus, I'd like to think that a teacher in any of our schools, all the way up to grade 12, is capable of doing the entire curriculum at any time. I don't know why. Well, I do know why there's a pushback against it. They're just being lazy. That's why there's a pushback.
So do you think maybe, Chris, that there's a happy medium? That happy medium being, you know, with Christy saying the teachers tend to be specialized. If you move your specialization and you move into something that's more math focused, then you have to have the test?
Yeah, I guess. But I think we're forgetting the reality here that this is just a union grandstanding. We're talking the actual grades that matter where kids are falling behind in math. It's well before you get to high school. So heaven forbid grades 1 through 8, you expect your math teacher to be able to pass a test with at least a B. What world do we live in now that we just accept the fact that we don't even question whether the teachers that are teaching our children are smart enough to teach the coursework that they're expecting our kids to learn. And then we're wondering why we're falling behind in math and sciences around the world. Like a 70% is a B. That's all right. We're asking our teachers to be to expect to pass. You can't get into university nowadays without at least an 80 in math, depending on what program you're applying to. So I think this is just absurd that we're even having this conversation. I think it's a good move. I think similar to, you know, I think it's refocusing our education system on the things that actually matter for kids moving forward, whether it's this or financial literacy. Like, let's get the basics right.
For the record, I would have been thrilled with B's.
I was just going to say that. I mean, I would have been ecstatic.
It won't get you into university anymore, though. Skills that matter.
Wow.
For the skills that matter, you need at least an 80 in at least one math course to get into most programs that are going to put you in a job afterwards. So I would hope at least our teachers are qualified to get you that.
Big story today that we're following. Ontario's highest court now granting a new trial for two men who were found guilty of terrorism charges after being accused of plotting to derail a Via Rail passenger train in the Greater Toronto Area. The Court of Appeals for Ontario ordering today that the 2015 convictions of these two men be set aside. A new trial was ordered. Both men still in custody will remain there unless they are released on a successful bail application. Lawyers arguing that it was jury selection that was the issue.
Criminal code had given essentially three options, and in this case, the trial judge misunderstood. It was determined after the fact by other appellate courts that the trial judge had really narrowed it down to two options, eliminating a third one. That third one is what the defense actually wanted to have happen, and so the defense never got to constitute its jury in the way that both it wanted to and in the way that legally it was entitled to. As a result of that, I think reluctantly, the Court of Appeals says if it's an improperly constituted jury, really nothing else matters. You've got an improper constitution of the jury. We can't hold by this decision. We've got to start all over again.
That News Talk 1010 legal analyst Ed Prucci. And I will start with you, Christy, because I even you sitting and listening to that, you covered
that. I covered that trial.
Yeah, it seems like such gobbledygook to me.
Well, how many ways can you make angels dance on the head of a pin? The suggestion when you say a jury is improperly constituted is that somehow it was a prejudiced or unfair jury. What they're actually talking about is the precise manner in which the jury is chosen. You can do it with what are called static triers. These are people who sort of are chosen from the pool of jurors. They become the triers. They determine, you know, when to challenge a prospective juror, et cetera. And they listen to the lawyers challenge them. Or you have rotating triers, and these
are... Can I ask you, Christy, are those just members of the public that are picked to be the triers?
Yes, yes, they're members of the public.
They're not going to be on the jury.
Well, not if you have static triers. If you have rotating triers, they will become a part... The first two will become juror number one and two, and then the next two will become jurors three and four, etc. And they each try a number of prospective jurors until they get the full complement. But the, as far as I know, there's no evidence. There is only the potential that this jury was somehow screwed because they were chosen this way. I mean, that judge, Michael Code, the trial judge, was so careful and bent over backwards so many ways to be fair to one of the accused, Essengeyer, who didn't have a lawyer, was self-represented, kept saying, oh no, I believe in the Quran. You know, I mean, it was an insane trial. And frankly, I know it's right in law, but I think it's an insane decision.
So do you think, Christy, and I wanted to ask a follow-up question, do you think when we hear so many people blaming judges and saying that, you know, that it's judges that need to change, that these judges are actually doing their best to work within the parameters that have been set for them, and they're just as frustrated as anybody else?
I can't imagine how Michael Code feels today. Yes, I think by and large we have an excellent judiciary. You know, there are people who aren't quite as excellent as there are in every field, but by and large, they're really good. They try really hard. They always give the break to the runner, as it were, to the defense. That's usually how it should work. And I mean, there's no suggestion that I am aware of. Now, I haven't covered all the various appeals that and decisions that led to this final ruling from the Court of Appeal. But I don't believe anybody said, well, these guys couldn't get a fair trial because that jury was, you know, was screwed up, was biased against them. They were screened for bias. They were asked if they were prejudiced against Muslim defendants, if the color of the skin mattered, etc. You know, I mean, they were asked what in Canada are the probing questions. They wouldn't be probing in the States, of course. They have a lot more freedom. But, you know, I think the trial was perfectly fair, frankly.
Bill, anything to add?
Just that I can't imagine any other trial, any other jury getting any other verdict anyway. So we're going to go through it all again, and we're going to get
the same
outcome. And that's right. We'll all be the poorer for it, which is very frustrating indeed. But could it possibly be more technical?
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
I read it and I read the whole decision and I kept thinking, okay, I'm missing something. Is it really just about this one tiny little aspect? And it was.
Chris?
I've just learned so much from Christy today on jury selection. I just presumed it was all the lawyers. I learned everything in jury selection from the Runaway Jury movie with the
John Cusack.
Gene Hackman. I thought it was just the lawyers that fought over this with, you know, spies and stuff. Turns out it was just rotating people of the public.
Several universities are tackling binge drinking by reconsidering how they run their orientation week activities. This includes Carleton University, which is running a dry frosh, Queen's University.
Fun.
I know.
Wasn't dry at Carleton when
Dry when I was a facilitator or a frosh either. Anyway, there was no Facebook back then, which was very helpful, I will tell you that. And part of the thing is educating young people about how to drink. So our question to you, and ask you first, Christy, do you think it's important to socialize drinking and that stuff with kids before they hit university, or do you think it's incumbent upon the universities to be educating these students so we stop a lot of these hospital visits and, you know, crazy other stories that we keep hearing about?
Yeah, look, I mean, I don't dispute for a minute that this is a problem for a few people with binge drinking. They get sick, they end up getting assaulted, etc. I mean, it's a bad scene, so obviously universities have to do something to address it and cover their asses at the same time. So I think that's all good, but they may have a dry frosh week, but there are still bars in Kingston, and all the other schools are close to bars too. So kids will just go to the bars, I guess, and pay more for drinks. I don't know. It just seems that because of the travails of a few, and I'm not minimizing the travails. I know a woman whose child drank for the first time a couple of years ago when she was in high school and got very ill and ended up in the hospital. They practically got her AA counseling. I accept that the problem is real, but I think most young people don't act like this, don't get this sick, and don't get this drunk. So it just, you know, I would never go to a frosh week anyway, shoot me in the head now, but I would certainly not go to a dry one where they have harm reduction talks. Oh, good.
Bill, you're in Ottawa. I, as a Carleton grad, I know they kind of take over the city, so does Ottawa U for frosh. What do you think of this?
Yeah, and they'll still take over the city. I guess they'll probably just do it more off campus. You know, I didn't think that universities could get more boring after grade 13 was eliminated, right? And we had younger people who were not drinking age now on campus. So they dialed back. A lot of the bars closed. And, well, it did. It got even more dull because they're planning a dry frosh week at Carleton University. That'll really be something. But this is where we are, right? We've got a new understanding of the sexual assaults that go on university campuses and the harms of drinking. And I guess that's where it's going to end up. But kids will still find a place to have a good time, I hope.
I hope so too. Chris?
What is this going to do? Like a dry week? Yeah. There's, you know, the other 51 weeks of the year. Like, it's just stupid. Every kid is still going to, if you're in Ottawa, you're going to go across to Gatineau and get drunk. It's first year university. Most kids that I know myself when I went to university, like, you smarten up near the end. You realize you got to focus on your school, and you can't live drinking five nights a week. It's frosh, let loose, have fun. That's what university's for. You learn, you have fun, you meet friends. This is just, I'm speechless.
He is speechless, people. He's struggling for words.
I'm actually just like, who thinks this is going to accomplish anything tangible is beyond me.
Well, it's pretty clear none of you are going to be invited to Carleton to be facilitators, that's for sure.
He's right about Gatineau, though, right? The drinking age is lower, and there's plenty, and the beer is cheaper.
The first thing I did at U of O is found out that we hopped on a bus and went straight across and realized we could drink at 18. Like,
did you manage to drink Gatineau pretty? Because it takes quite a lot.
Bill Carroll, Christy Blashford, Chris Chapin, thank you all. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Thank you.